So we're in this series called Upgrade, and so thankful to have you join us in worship this morning. I decided to start with a definition of upgrade. It's just very simply to raise to a higher degree or standard. And when I think about upgrade, I actually think of two words, and maybe you guys can commiserate with me about this. I think of upgrade regret. Have any of you experienced that, especially as it relates to, I was thinking about apps for your phone. You know what I'm saying? Like you upgrade, you know, you get upgraded and you're like, oh, I like the other app better. And I got to figure out all the upgrade thing. I know they're telling me it's better, but I was used to how it looked and the way it felt and what it did and everything. I was thinking about this as it relates to this past Memorial Day weekend. Just several weeks ago, I was experiencing some upgrade regret. Let me tell you about it. Our washer of over 10 years died. You may think that's not a big deal, but for a family of seven, it's a big deal. And it sent us into crisis mode. So I went to an appliance dealer here locally in the Metroplex, one of those big box stores. I won't tell you the name, but it rhymes with Rose. And an employee was advising me and preparing me for my appliance future. And true conversation I really had with this guy, he said, you know, just be prepared. None of the models on this floor, no matter how much you spend, are going to last as long as the one you just had. Yes, that's good. They're all made with cheaper materials, and they break easier, and there's more things to break. There's more electronics to go wrong, and so just wanted to let you know that. But on the upside, well, actually, he had more downside for me. He said the cycles also will last longer, anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes longer it will take to do your clothes. But on the upside, you'll be saving the environment because you can do a whole load of laundry in like a thimble of water. And so I don't know exactly how that works, you know, but I'm like, okay, well, we'll do this. So I buy the washer, get it home, get it all hooked up and everything. And what I am here to tell you today is that I go back to what I was originally thinking when I walked in the store. All I really wanted was something that was small, medium, large loads, hot, cold, temp. What I have is a washer that sings to me. It plays music. Finished a load about 10:30 last night. I thought the ice cream truck was going down for some reason. The street, late, I'm like, what? But the good news is on the new machine, it has this automatic lock on the door, you know, that protects me from myself so I don't willy-nilly just throw in an extra sock. No, you can't do that. You know, lock it down. I'm not kidding you. As if it was preparing me for this sermon. See, I've got some issues here, and I'm going to need you to counsel me a little bit on this. Last night, I walked in, true story, we had come in from out of town, we were visiting relatives in Oklahoma, came in, we were doing several loads of clothes. I washed this one load of clothes, it said 11 minutes left on the cycle, right? I went and did things, I was gone for like 10 minutes, I came back, it said 17 minutes left. I don't know, that's the new one. Upgrade regret is what I'm feeling. But you know what? What I wanted to give us as a thought this morning is that upgrade regret is not a reality with Jesus. And I hope you kind of place that in the back of your mind, not only for the rest of this sermon, but for all the rest of the series, because we're going to stay in this upgrade series all through the month of August. And the reality for us is that as we look at Scripture and we see what God has planned for us, upgrade regret is not a reality with Jesus. As we consider our calling to move from a life of comfort to one of contentment, we should keep that in the back of our mind. Now, I've got a couple of quotes that I'm going to read to you. One, two actually, from A.W. Tozer, and I wanted to read this one because it stings a little bit. And so it's good for me to hear it. It's also interesting that he wrote this decades ago. Churches cannot deny they are too comfortable, too rich, too contented. We hold the faith of our fathers, but it does not hold us. God is trying to interest us in a glorious tomorrow, and we are settling for an inglorious today. God has set eternity in our hearts, and we have chosen time instead. We are bogged down in local interests and have lost sight of eternal purposes. It was the knowledge that they were part of God's eternal plan that imparted unquenchable enthusiasm to the early Christians. They burned with holy zeal for Christ and felt they were part of an army which the Lord was leading to ultimate conquest over all the powers of darkness. When you woke up this morning, is that what you thought of yourself? Have we been living in that calling? I'm reminded of the song Paul Smith, who used to sing with the Imperials, went and launched a solo career after that. And there's moments, you know, maybe it's like you, maybe you're into music, maybe you're not. But for those of us who kind of get captivated by music, there's different songs that just kind of grab you and hold on. And this one did that to me, going through a lot of different things in my life in the mid-90s. And this song by Paul Smith, Unimportant Things, and the chorus, it's so easy to live for unimportant things, to lose sight of heaven as we chase our man-made dreams. Lord, free us to focus on what life really means and teach us to look past unimportant things. That's our calling. That's what God has been pushing us toward. That's what A.W. Tozer was trying to get us to recognize, is that we can so easily settle for what's just around us. An invitation to an eternity with God, to be part of God's plan to bring hope and healing and victory over the power of darkness, to live that way. So my brother-in-law and I were together. Actually, we were together in Oklahoma this past weekend, but they were also at our house 3 or 4 weeks ago, and actually it was in July. And we went to a movie together, which we often do, because together, he's got a family of five, I've got a family of seven, and it just doesn't afford us that often to really get away and go to the movies. And so what happens, unless it's like, I mean, like all the little Disney flicks and stuff, and I get that, do that. But here we have this opportunity to go see this manly film, right? And so we're sitting in the theater, and we turn to each other, and we're like, this is a moment. Like, this is our 20th anniversary. And here's why. Because what we realized was 20 years ago on that day, we were at a theater in Oklahoma City, having both just gotten married, his wedding, my wedding in May, his in June, and we were both sitting there newly married watching Independence Day. And 20 years later, we're sitting there watching Independence Day 2. It was a moment. And I'm not like trying to like tell you I'm endorsing the movie or not. I mean, the reality is there was no Will Smith, enough said. But what I will tell you is we were in that moment realizing we had no clue how significant theologically it was going to be for us. Say the movie? No, not so much. The conversation afterwards. Because we ended the movie, we're in the car and talking about apocalyptic things. And how easy it is for our culture to get so consumed by the world being destroyed by, oh, I don't know, who, Sharknadoes. I mean, all kinds of things, right? And we just kind of create all of these moments where everything just gets destroyed and it's life after and what happens. And it's easy for us to dive into that. It's easy for us to dive into that in Hollywood. It's easy for us to buy tickets to that. It's easy for us to grasp that, as bizarre and obscure as it may be. And yet, here's what's difficult for us to grasp: the enormity of the true apocalypse, of the day when Christ does return, of the moment when every knee will bow before a God who has created all things. And in that moment, we were talking and thinking, wow, it is so easy for us to live for unimportant things. Well, Paul is writing about this and trying to help us gain some perspective here and realizing, hey, we're free to live this way. Galatians 5, we were in a series in Galatians earlier in the year. I want to bring us back again to Galatians 5:13. For you were called to be free, brothers, only don't use this freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but serve one another through love. For the entire law is fulfilled in one statement: love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, watch out, or you will be consumed by one another. I say then, walk by the Spirit, and you will not carry out the desires of the flesh. Paul is saying here, our calling is to live in freedom. This freedom is not meant to lead us into a life that satisfies sinful desires, as he states. It's not to live a life of comfort as our greatest goal. But instead, it's designed to lead us toward a life that chooses to serve. I was thinking about that just with Bill and Peg Pearson, who were sitting right over here in the service last week. And I pointed them out to you, if you were here, and told them they're missionaries that we support in the Dominican Republic. And we did some video of them yet last week, so that we'll show it later on in the screen. But I'll just kind of let you know ahead of time. Here's what their short story is. Bill was a real estate developer, a very successful one. And as he neared retirement, was asking the question, God, what next? And you know what God did? Moved him away from, okay, well, we can just take all the money that we have made and live in comfort with our kids and grandkids. And pushed him instead out of the comfort zone into the Dominican Republic in a small apartment where they do life with those people day in and day out, planting multiple churches. And that's how he's living retirement. And I'm thinking to myself as he's sharing that story and talking about it on video, you know, our community, where we live, we focus so much on, well, one day we're just going to be able to be comfortable. God calls us into living in a way that we are freed from the trappings of even how our life is supposed to end, so our country says. Freed to live, to serve, freed from the law, freed, as Paul was describing to these Jewish Christians, from all the laws that had been encumbering them. You see, they were being taught that, you know, well, you've got to do this and you've got to do that. There was the circumcision thing. All of these things to do. They had a history of putting those things into practice. 613 laws. Some of them wouldn't make sense to us today. Don't cook a young goat in his mother's milk. I don't think many of you are going to go home and do that for lunch. Don't eat an animal with a split hoof. When you tie your robe, tie it together with the fourth knot from the down, making sure that it has a certain turn in it. It seems like foolishness to us, but these were the laws. And Paul was saying, wait, you are free. How does that resonate to us? Well, we're talking about service today. We're talking about living lives of impact, but we don't want to mess up and lead astray. And Paul was trying not to lead astray as well here in saying, hey, listen, hold on. We can easily get caught up in performance. Because I go to church, because I've read my Bible more this year than last year, so God loves me more, because I give money now, because I volunteer. Here's what he's saying in this passage. Listen, just be reminded, we are made right with God, not because we have performed. As a matter of fact, we have underperformed. So much so that we needed Jesus. The sin was in the house, and he is the one who has made us right before God. He is the one who by faith, not by the keeping of the law, not by performance, makes us holy. So we get to this word here in this chapter, freedom, and it's an interesting Greek word because it has to do with launching. It's the Greek word aphorme. It's a springboard. I was thinking about this word as it relates to Friday night, because what happens on Friday night? Olympic ceremony. Olympic start. Can't wait. Diving off the diving board. You know, the U.S. Olympic team has more diving medals than any other country in the history of the Olympics. Pretty cool. You'll see why we excel when you see some of the others that compete. Here's one. There you go. Slow-mo is better. Ah, that was that was the Olympic trials in Singapore. I don't know that maybe they'll go for the copper medal. I don't know. We're all on that diving board, and what Paul is trying to paint the picture of here is, okay, here we go. We're about to spring it. Our freedom is springing us somewhere. Even as a believer, it's going to spring us into selfishness or selflessness. It's going to spring us toward a life that is chained to the chariot of the Savior or chained to my sinful nature. See, my diving off moment has lots of possibilities as a believer. I've shared some of this with you before. I'm not a real big fan of cutting grass. I don't know if anybody else is like that. I'm convinced that myself, as well as several of you, actually chose Lantana for that reason. And you get your front yard cut, you know, you pay a lot for it, but you know, you get the front yard cut. We got a small backyard, and I've made it even smaller by making sure there's a kidscape there and there's a trampoline, which means all the grass is dead under it. So we've got, you know, very limited amount of grass that I have to mow now, which is great. But you know, when Holly and I first got married, we were living full-time at a church in a community, in a Baton Rouge community, full-time working at a church. We were in a rent house. This is before kids. The rent house was on about a half acre, and I was responsible for mowing it. The backyard had a swing set, even though we didn't have a kid. It was a rent house. It's just how it came. My father-in-law was so very kind, he wound up giving me a lawnmower that I could use, a riding lawnmower, to actually get everything cut. I think he knew I was not real fond of cutting grass. I don't know if you're aware of this, but there are places that are not like Dallas where the grass grows in like an insanely rate. That's Baton Rouge. That's where I grew up in Houston as well. But it's like it grows year-round. It's full. It's thick. You know, it's hot. It's humid. It's mosquitoes. It's Baton Rouge. And I'm plowing through that, just frustrated that I'm even having to be out here mowing grass that's not even mine around a swing set. I don't even have children. And I just, at one point, I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to do this as fast as I possibly can and just be done with it. And so I decide I'm going to go under the swing set with the lawnmower instead of actually moving everything away. And as I started to go under the swing set, all of a sudden, with the left, I misjudged. And one of the swings caught me underneath my left arm and my chin and started to pull me off of the mower because the mower kept going. There was a wall on the other side, and it literally bumped against the wall, the little wooden fence there, and jolted just enough to where my foot and caught the steering wheel and turned it slightly. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't be speaking to you today. It yanked me off of the lawnmower. I fell to the ground. The lawnmower went into the fence, broke multiple boards. I got up, looked over to the right. Holly was on the patio. She wasn't dialing 911. She wasn't running to my aid. My wife of 18 months was laughing hysterically and probably lamenting what the rest of her life would be like. My stepfather, on the other hand, in that same period of time, was cutting not only his grass, but other people's grass in his neighborhood just because he loved them. Selfless man. Selfish man. There was a springboard moment of opportunity that we could have approached either one of those opportunities. And you know what I chose? I chose just get it done. I'm frustrated. My attitude is horrible. Why do I have to be doing this? We have the freedom to be self-centered, to wrap everything around us, or to be selfless with our lives. In this passage, Paul is also preaching against this twisted idea that somehow there's this awesome mashup. You know, I'm a great sinner, and God is a great forgiver, and so this just works really well. Because I get to do this, and watch this, and engage in this, and think this, and you know what, at the end of the day, I get this get-out-of-jail-free card called forgiveness, and so all is good. But here's what Jesus says, if you love me, you'll obey me. And by the way, abused freedom is always going to result eventually in pain. I'll either be enslaved to Christ or slave to sin. I was thinking about this path that we're on and a book that was recently written called Pilgrim's Progress. Not recently, long time ago. And in the book, he's on the path. He's on the road. This is an allegory to the Christian life. And Mr. Worldwise, he meets him. And Mr. Worldwise starts to paint a picture of this one city that he could go to, this village called Morality, where a man by the name of Legality lived. And he describes it. He says, listen, you can send your wife and your children to come into this village where there are houses now standing empty, one of which you can have at a reasonable rate. Provisions are there, also cheap and good. And that which will make your life the more happy is this, that there shall certainly live beside honest neighbors in credit and good fashion. I mean, he paints a beautiful picture. And he starts to move Christian off of the path that leads to godliness, off of the path that he is called to, and onto this path of doing enough, onto this path of performance, onto this path of just being a good moral person. And it says, so Christian turned out of his way to go to Mr. Legality's house. Behold, when he came to the hill, it seemed high. And also that side of it, which was next to the road, hung over so much that the Christian was afraid to go farther for fear that the hill would fall on his head. He started to realize maybe this wasn't all it was cracked up to be. In discussing this with the evangelist who helped him get back on his way again, it says, so he said that he would show me a better way and a shorter way, as he's describing Mr. Worldly Wise's comments. One not so attended with difficulties. Catch this. This is what he tells the evangelist. He says, but when I came to this place and saw things as they are. And here's the prayer. The prayer is that God, that you would just help us get to the place where we see things as they are. That we're not just called to live a life of comfort, that we're actually called to live a life of contentment, but in that contentment, it is with commitment and a devotion to giving everything to you, Jesus. And if we don't, then wow, yeah, you know, we can try to upgrade our lives in comfort, but it always ends in destruction. We see that in the New Testament church. Verse 15, but if you bite and devour one another, watch out, or you will be consumed by one another. Devour, the Greek word here has to do with like a dog fight, devouring each other. In the New Testament, we saw that over and over and over again. When the church became introverted, when they began to focus on their needs, on their comfort, you know what happened? Well, there's just a litany of ways in which this is lived out. In Acts 5, the church is described as hypocritical and lying. In Acts 6, complaining and murmuring. In Acts 6 and Galatians 2, there are accusations of preferential treatment and racism. In 1 Corinthians 5, sexual immorality. In 1 Corinthians 6, suing other members of the church. In 1 Corinthians 11, abusing the Lord's Supper. In 1 Corinthians 12, abusing spiritual gifts. In 1 Corinthians 16, a lack of giving. In Philippians chapter 2, division among church members. You see, when the church becomes inward focused, problems are on the horizon. We stop doing life the way God intended, both as individuals and as the church. When we allow our freedom to become bent towards self-centeredness rather than selflessness, the enemy officially has a foothold in our lives. And when it happens in the church, it begins to corrupt his bride in such a way and tarnish his image in the world. I've grown up in the church, and I've seen, and as well many of you, how often it is that the church resembles other civic organizations, right? Where 20% of the people are doing the work. And I think about that in relation to the people that I know in this crowd and the multiple hats that so many of you wear. And I just wonder sometimes, I wonder what the church would look like if we all, those that are in that 20%, weren't wearing 4, 5, 6 hats. I wonder what it looked like if you could really give yourself fully to that one moment of service. And not feel out of duty or compulsion to have to fill 6 or 7 different slots in children's ministry or in mission work. Or what would it look like if everybody was zoned in on the calling that God has for them, that each one of us really was consuming God, but not living as a consumer in the church, but a producer. I think it would not look like the New Testament church was described every time the church turned that direction. And it also would certainly lead to a whole lot less burnout, wouldn't it? For those of you who are wearing 4, 5, 6 different hats. Many of you, whether it's student ministry or small group in your house or plugged into missional opportunities, you would say, you know what, I can't imagine not doing life that way. That's what I was called to. Maybe what it is what God is challenging you with this morning is just to reconsider again, what is it that you want me to do as we think about upgrading the impact you want to have with my life, God? What does that look like? Upgrade my attitude? My attitude cutting grass was awful. Maybe sometimes you're walking in thinking, oh man, I just wish somebody else would serve with me, or I can't believe I'm having to do this again, or the monotonous of, the nursery, or this or that or whatever, and you just kind of go, ah, and God's like, I want to take this moment for you to take a deep breath of fresh air and go, here in this moment, Jesus wants to upgrade your attitude. And it's not about us just saying, how can we do more or do it all? But to say, God, I want to live in the moment with you, seeing your kingdom expand on this life. I know that you want for my life and my plan, your plans for me are bigger than what I can. And so, God, I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning and the next and the next and the next wanting to live out your plans. Now, one other thought, and this comes from Tozer as well. And I love this quote because it's so challenging for us. We can talk about upgrading our service or updating impact or whatever all day long, but sometimes even that can move us toward this sense of incorrect theology. Tozer writes, I could never offer myself to a guy that actually needed me, brethren. If he needed me, I could not respect him. And if I could not respect him, I could not worship him. Some of our missionary appeals are getting close to that same error, that we should engage in missionary work because God needs us so badly. The fact is that God is riding above this world, and the clouds are the dust of his feet. And if you do not follow him, you will lose all, and God will lose nothing. Wow. God is inviting us to join him, but he doesn't need us. You know that quote makes me go back to one of the last songs we sang that Matt and the group up here was leading us in. How great thou art. It's really because we aren't the church unless we give ourselves away. You see, that's Jesus. That's the church he died for. That's the image that this world needs to see. And he's invited us on this journey. So there are a variety of different ways that you could get connected here. But again, it's not about you being at the church more. It's really about discovering what it means to be the church, to be the bride of Christ. Because as a follower of his, that is who you are. I want you to meet a couple of guys who followed that calling. As we begin to wind down, I've got Luke and Derek coming in. They serve in our children's ministry. And there's, it's the family ministry hat that I wear. When I look at these guys, they make me smile. Because I think about my own children and about the families that I've gotten to know here over the last 5.5 years. And what God is doing in our kids and our families because men are answering the call. Why don't you share about what that has been like for you guys?
Yeah, for me, I was really, it was kind of on my heart to think about how men actually have an impact so greatly on each of our children. And I grew up in an environment in inner city Detroit where you just did not have men around. And I love looking into the audience today and seeing so many men here, because even in my community growing up, it was majority women. So even in the church. So to be able to see so many men here, and I'm looking at arms around their kids, arms around their wives, and it's spectacular to see, and it's a blessing. But, you know, growing up, I was fortunate enough to have my father. And my father served as really father to many other many of my other friends because their fathers weren't around. And I'm convinced that it changed my trajectory of where I was going in life just because I had that impact of that male role model. I believe it allowed me to go to college. He set boundaries and just gave me a strong sense of self. I was able to go to Texas A&M for undergrad, and then he continued to push me, and I was blessed to be able to go to Harvard for business school, and which is a long way for where I thought I was starting. So when I was asked to say, how would you encourage other men to get involved in impacting the lives of our collective children? I kind of went back and said, okay, well, I'll go back to one of the case studies that I had in Boston. And, they talk really weird, and when everybody is, they're going to, I'm going to the bar, I'm going to take my car to the bar, and everybody's wicked smart. And that's all I got from Goodwill Hunting. So there's nothing sillier than a black guy with a Boston accent. So in this case study, they said, okay, you're working for the juvenile detention center, and your job is to get people door to door to volunteer their time. So they said, okay, it went something like this. It says, hello, my name is Derek. I work for the juvenile detention center, and I'm asking if any men would be willing to be a role model and take a small group of young men to the zoo for one afternoon. Anybody want to guess how many people signed up for that? It was zero. And they said, this is horrible. Nobody's going to help these young men that are trying to change their trajectory. So they said, okay, well, you got to change the ask. You have to have the double ask. That goes something like this. Hello, my name is Derek. I'm working with the Juvenile Detention Center. I would like to ask if you can commit one day a week for the next year for underprivileged youth and to help impact and change their trajectory. Again, it was a zero. Nobody signed up for that. But then when you came back around and said, well, but would you be willing to do one afternoon and take them to the zoo? And then, okay, well, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah. So 4 out of 10 said, yeah, I'll do that. My point for bringing that up is, what is it that you need to hear in order for you to get involved, in order for you to change the trajectory of a young man or a young lady, to help them do more than what they thought they were going to do? I hope you'll consider it.
Thanks. I would just add to that. I just came straight here from working with third grade boys this morning. And so there's the call, man, If you're excited about taking some kids to the zoo, I got to tell you, working with third grade boys isn't a whole lot different, really. I mean, kind of a zoo in there, I'm going to be honest. And this morning, we kind of had an interesting icebreaker type question for the guys. I asked the guys, I'm like, all right, let's think about what it takes to be a friend. So, of course, boys aren't a whole lot different than men, right? We don't have, like, every kid thrusting his arm in the air wanting to share something about how he feels, right? But it's cool, and it's very telling because one kid raised his hand, and he had given a great deal of thought, and he said, I think a friend is someone that will help me make a stunt track for my bike with lots of dangerous jumps. And hey, I mean, that was the answer. I think every kid in there agreed, yep, that's it right there. That's a friend, all right? So I think that really speaks to our need for why we need you guys to step up and be a part of that. I mean, you guys can remember back of what it's like to be young and just want to smash something and destroy stuff just for the sport of it, right? But really, it's fun, and I would just say you don't have to be a seminary-level biblical scholar to roll up your sleeves and get involved with these guys. And it really is rewarding, and it really is a lot of fun. And Derek really pointed out, just as a testimony of his life, just how important it is, not only that his dad helped him out, but just for other men to come alongside as a community and get all that excitement and get all that energy just pointed in the right direction. So there's the call, guys. You know, and really, just wherever you are in your life, there's a place for you, I would say. You might be somebody that's young that just has a new family or not any kids at all. What a great opportunity for you to plug in and kind of see a glimpse of what it's going to be like in the future, right? Someone might say birth control. or, hey, if you already have kids, what a great opportunity for you to get involved and maybe get one layer closer to what's going on in their life. And there again, if you are further along in your years, what a great opportunity for someone that's more seasoned to share their wisdom with these young guys. And lots of reward there. Definitely lots of opportunities for you guys to step up and be a part of this. And I got to tell you, man, it's a lot of fun. So I guess the call to action would be we have tables out there today. And there's a table in particular for children's ministry that's near the south entrance. So if the Lord's tugging at your heart or you're interested at all, please stop by there and get some more information. And that call goes out to ladies as well. We just need lots of help, obviously. Just to pitch into something that's great that's already going on in children's ministry. Thank you.
Give these guys a hand.
Yep.
Thanks, guys. So I love how that those testimonies dovetail into just what we're talking about calling. How God's called each one of us. How Derek discovered that calling and what God was pushing him toward. How Luke discovered that calling as it relates to him being married to the children's pastor here and not having an option. But just calling. No. Amazing guys. You guys, some of you are going, you know, I don't know. I mean, I know there's options on the weekend, and it's children or students or ushers or greeters or you name it. There's so many things that could be done on the weekend. And you go, you know, that's just not me. I can't commit to weekend stuff. I'm not here enough to do that. I just, you know, midweek maybe. You know, that might be easy. But okay, we got that too. There are places to connect. Student ministry needs small group leaders middle of the week. You know, we've got church planters that we support in Cuba. That you know what we could use some of you who are bilingual to help translate some of the things they send us, because we send that stuff through Google Translator sometimes, and it's just like, I had no idea there were flowers in that commode on the ceiling. I mean, it doesn't make sense. And we could use your help. I was talking with somebody here locally just a few weeks ago, who said there's a need in our community, in the Flower Mound community right now, for people who would be willing to step out into nursing home ministry. We have the McDaniels who help serve in that way. And, you know, I think about the teams and those of you who do that and what an amazing opportunity that is. But some of you, wow, you know what? That'd be a great stepping off point for you. And yeah, that one is typically on the weekend. But you know what? It would feel such a significant need. Because you know, for a lot of you, you've got parents who are moving into this community, or you're representative of that age, and might not be able to have them in your house, but you're finding places for them to go in the community. And you know what these nursing home administrators are saying? We need people who can run services for us on the weekend. And maybe you don't sing, and that's okay. Maybe music's not a part of that service that you create. But you know what? How many times have you watched with a pseudo-critical eye thinking, well, I would have done that up there instead? You could create your own for an audience that will love you regardless of what you do, because you're loving them, and it's a need. And so whether it's CCA or men and women of Nehemiah, Salvation Army, the list goes on and on and on and on in ways that we connect and support. Kids Hope USA, Shannon Longwell, Jeannie Ferrier. One kid, 1 hour, one day a week. And you know what? We are seeing the impact of that with lives of kids who have connected with us even in ministries here as a result of that mentoring. So the challenge for us is just to jump in. And you know what? As we jump in, recognize, okay, I'm on this springboard. I'm going somewhere tomorrow. And where I'm jumping off to, it might be more comfort. Or it might be more commitment. But you know what? In that commitment, I'm going to find contentment. And in that commitment, I'm going to find what I was designed to be and do. I'm going to discover who the church is as it relates to me. Jesus was very clear. He actually says in Mark 10:45, "For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many." How did he live that out? He lived that out even among his disciples, where as he gathered them around, the last time he would be with them, the last time that he would zone in with these guys he had spent 3 years devoting his life to, knowing, obviously, in the back of his mind that these guys were going to be cowards, that there was going to be denial, that there was going to be desertion, all of these things coming from this most committed crew. And what did Jesus do? He gathers them all together and he whispers in their ears, "Guys, listen, pass this down to your children's children's children. Buy stock in Apple." And when sports become a big deal, make sure you put your money on the Yankees, the Packers, and the Celtics. That's not what he did. He showed them how to serve. At the end of the day, that's the picture he wanted to leave them. Philippians 2 speaks of Jesus in this way: "Make your own attitude that of Christ Jesus, who existing in the form of God did not consider equality with God as something to be used for his own advantage. Instead, he emptied himself by assuming the form of a slave, taking on the likeness of men." How is true freedom realized? Galatians chapter 5. By denying self. Saying, as I jump off, I'm going to jump off in a life that God is continuing to upgrade every day. And the beauty of the upgrade is this: as Jesus continues to upgrade my life, he just causes me to look more and more and more like him as I understand him more, as my commitment to him grows. And 2,000 years later, can I just tell you that the product you receive has never had to go through any upgrades? That the product that you receive is perfect. That the washing machine you receive in Jesus does not cost more than it did 2,000 years ago. You see, he paid every dime of it on the cross already. And what he invites us to do is to walk into this perfect product, this eternal one, and say, "Yes, this is worth surrendering everything to. The upgrade regret is not there. My life of impact with Jesus is worth it all." So God, we're just reminded again this morning of how big you are. And God, as you just point us in directions of ways we can give our life away. It may look a lot of different ways around here or in apartment complexes around us or in our own family and the relationships there. But God, will you just in every person's mind right now, in every heart, God, will you take and whisper to them, what does that jumping off look like? How are you taking them into that place of deeper commitment to you? Father, thank you that it's not by accident we would have all shown up here, but God, you intentionally are doing something in this moment. And so we're listening. and we're ready.